from the first instance, the committee secretary, one of the committee secretaries, Mr. Andre Hermans, who has unfortunately contracted this virus going around, and I myself having had it, knowing what ill one feels, he's excused today to recover. Being kind to recover for a week. Then we also have, just a minute. Coming back to the apologies, we have the Honourable Kwang Kwang from the UDM, who's an alternate member, who has sent an apology as well. Of course, we also have the lost a member from this committee, after a valiant battle with lung cancer, with Dr. Mario Oriani-Ambrosini. And I saw that very early on Saturday morning. I sent through a message as chair and on behalf of the committee in which he served in the previous term fully and has been officially a member of this committee as well and attended on two occasions and indicated that certainly his loss, the loss of anyone of course, diminishes us. And I think the loss of somebody, even if one doesn't agree with them politically, but who makes a constructive contribution, has to be recognised as well. So he will be, I understand, either a memorial or his burial, his funeral will be on Saturday, and I will, of course, keep you briefed in that respect. I don't have any other apologies, thank you. To return to the opening, I look at the time we've worked together in the Fifth Parliament, and it's got to be something like at least 8 or 10 weeks now. And during the course of that time, it has enabled members to get a feel for the mandate of the committee to some degree. I get a feel, not a clear understanding, but at least a feel. But what's also got to be recognised is the need for us to tighten up on how the committee is run. People have had the opportunity to give speeches here, have the opportunity to basically run on and on for 5 minutes at a time, and that's fine when people are getting to grips with how to operate in a committee. But we are returning to our style of 2 or 3 questions and 2 minutes, whichever is shortest, before having another bite, if you like, given the time. The third thing I'd like to alert members to, all members, is that it is required constitutionally that we apply our minds. We apply our minds to the issue before us. The application of one's mind has been clearly spelled out by the Constitutional Court. And that does not require that our presence is virtual in this meeting. And that researchers screen and questions to us to ensure that we appear to be alert. I will no longer allow that. I want every member of this committee to be aware of that now. That does not prevent you from using any electronic devices that Parliament allows to assist you on the issue before the committee. Finally, notwithstanding that we live in the electronic age, I need to inform you that I do not have equipment, and neither do I have a cell phone that is operative. So if you do wish to contact me, you need to do so through my secretary, Ms. Tandisa Makanda, whose landline is 403-3137, or to send her an email, or to send me a hard copy and put it in my mailbox, which is next to the old assembly. With respect to any issues directly arising out of this committee, you need to contact either the committee secretary, Mr. Mkiza, who's here before us, or Mr. Hermans, who I understand are fully electronically operational. Good. So, we are not disabled. We are able to operate. Just remember to use your legs. His mailbox here is hard. Thank you. Right. Now, we've got the apologies. Do you wish to add something on the mailbox?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, no, I with due respect to what Ted will say, Chair, in future, if you want to communicate something to us, we'll appreciate it if we do it in-house so that we're able to engage each other appropriately. Because if we do it in a forum like this, how do we deal with it? Because I don't think it's appropriate, so I'm just suggesting to you that in future, let's do it in-house. I think it's more appropriate. Thank you.
It's very appropriate that the chairmate is aware of how she should be or he should be contacted until the matter is sorted out. I have an obligation so that you don't believe you can just phone me.
No,
I'm not going to engage on it, Honourable Strathfield. Yes, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think while we're talking about communication and being in contact, and it's a great frustration of mine because on the 12th of August I had sent an email to your parliamentary account and to that of Mr. Hermans for a very specific request dealing with a very urgent issue, and that was for the request for the NCR to appear before the DTI committee. And 7 days later I still have not got a response. And that is problematic because this is a very serious, very topical issue that is affecting millions of South Africans. And why is a member of this committee not to have a response in regards to that? And I have great difficulty in accepting that is the standard or the norm. And to date, I still don't have a response to this.
I'm not sure why you don't have a response because I was made aware of your email by Mr. Hermans and also asked him to communicate with you, indicating that I had already written a letter to the NCR before I even got your email. I didn't get it personally. And I can't comment as to why he didn't do that. He may have been ill at the time. I really can't comment. But already a letter had gone from this committee requesting the NCR to account, and that had gone, I'm not sure if I've just got it right here, yes I do. The letter was sent on the 14th of August with the response. I've now got, the response arrived on the 15th. I will be addressing that before we adopt the agenda. Thank you. Honourable
Sorbo. Thank you, Chair. I was making a proposal that we please revert this particular discussion. And we have discussion as members of Parliament in terms of officials. Because I don't think that the manner in which we are handling this matter is correct.
Thank you, Honourable. Right. To come to the adoption of the agenda. The agenda as it stands remains as it stands. However, with respect to Friday's agenda, and I'll give that to you in advance, after briefly having a word with the DG, Mr. October, regarding the Friday program, I haven't had an opportunity to discuss this with the DDG itself. We're going to, and I've also been made aware that the SDR are able to come to a committee on that day, but I wasn't aware of that earlier. They will be here on Friday, and they will take the slot of the DTI on the IPAP project. So they will be here on Friday. Meanwhile, the letter that I now have will be photostated for you, and you'll be able to study the response of the NCR before that time. Yes, thank you. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Honourable Stevenson. So just to get clarity that we will have an opportunity to engage with them on the land bank issue on Friday then.
I wasn't aware the land bank was an issue. Yes, Honourable Shibabu?
Can we please start the meeting as per that, you know, and we attend for? Please.
We're on the point of being precisely that, Honourable Shibabu, but thank you. I'm proposing, asking someone to propose the adoption of the agenda as it stands. Thank you, Honourable Sorbo. Seconded by? Thank you, Honourable Albert.
I then look towards the DTI here
on my left. DG. Mr. Lionel October, I'm sure he'll introduce his members as they appear. So we've asked you to please come here to the committee and give us a detailed briefing on the SED policy, related incentives, and its implementation status. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and the committee. The presentation will be done by our Acting Deputy Director General for Incentive Administration, Susan Mangoli, and Mr. Alfred Powell will deal with the issues relating to the 10 SEZs and their implementation. Let me just say by way of introduction and to provide some context for the special economic zones. As you know, in terms of the strategic plan that was presented and our Minister and Deputy Minister's budget votes, it is clear that in order for us to get out of this, I think what can characterize as a low growth track, we need a major program of reindustrialization. But that reindustrialization cannot only take place within the existing major industrial areas of KZN, Gauteng, Durban, Gauteng and Western Cape, Cape Town specifically. We have to change the spatial dimension of our industrialization drive. And so for that reason, we have targeted two economic zones as the key instruments we're going to be using for that. So in terms of the special economic zone issues, our presentation will use three broad areas. The first one is we have put in place, as you did in the last administration, special legislation to provide a governance framework for all our special economic zones. So that's the first thing we'll do with, and we'll give you an update on our report on our progress with regard to the governance arrangements. The second thing we're doing is that we are simultaneously working on as soon as possible, but in the next 6 to 12 months, we hope to launch 10 special economic zones in all provinces across the country. And the third thing we hope to do is we hope to synchronize that there isn't a large gap between the establishment of a SEZ and the attraction of investors into the SEZs. So by way of example, we, Cabinet, about a month ago, designated Kinshasa Airport, or the Pune Trade Zone, as our next special economic zone. Simultaneously in that zone, we've already been able to secure an agreement from Samsung, let's say the second, third largest company in the world, will be establishing in that special economic zone. So we hope to, in launching, and then Mr. Tao will give us some progress on that, but we hope to simultaneously link these special economic zones with investment opportunity and job opportunities as we go along. So, Honourable Chair, Susan will give that presentation and then we'll take some questions on our progress.
Susan is saying acting DDG. That's right.
For the Senate Administration.
Good morning, Honourable Members, and thank you, DG, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think today we are here to give the progress status with regard to the policy on the development of the SEZ in South Africa. Because I think we started this process with Parliament about 2 years back, or in 2012. But I think the main thing is just to give the status of how far are we in terms of implementing that. The main thing of the policy, what it was introduced, to provide a clear policy framework in terms of development as well as operations and management of the SEZ, including some of the challenges that are faced by the current SEZ. And when you look at some of those challenges that we are currently addressing into the SEZ policy, it's lack of ITZ-specific incentives, ad hoc funding arrangements, lack of targeted investment promotion, lack of focus on host regions. The aim and the purpose of the policy is to expand strategic focus to cover diverse regional needs. Like DG has said, that now what we are seeing is KZN, Gauteng, Western Cape, then Eastern Cape. So now we are moving in other provinces such as Free State, Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga. In order to provide a clear, predictable planning framework to support implementation of IPAP, NGP, and NGP. And the other thing also that we're also trying to address in the SEZ policy is developing a comprehensive program to support development of SEZ, as well as addressing those challenges that are encountered by the SEZ. The policy objective, again, is to facilitate creation of industrial complexes, having strategic competitive advantage for targeted investments and industries, to promote beneficiation and value addition to minerals and natural resources, as well as to develop infrastructure required to support development of targeted industries. And I think this will also contribute to balanced industrial development. Some of the key aspects of the SEZ policy is the institutional framework. We've got the minister. The minister will then appoint the advisory board, and the DTI is actually facilitating the appointment of the advisory board. The governance arrangement in terms of the ownership, operator, oversight, and coordination, strategy to apply desired approach and rights to both existing and planned SEZ. The setting up of the SEZ fund, because when we set up the SEZ fund, we will also address the issue of the funding that was encountered by the existing SEZ. The SEZ incentives for greenfield and brownfield investment, eligible activities in line with IPAP and IPAP NDP and NGP. The key aspect of the policy is support systems that go beyond provisioning of world-class physical infrastructure. Planning of SEZ focus on host capabilities over the long term and coordinated between the tiers of government. Provide a one-stop shop service facility that each SEZ to offer globally competitive value-added service to investors. So that when an investor is sitting outside the country, they will have an opportunity to have a one-stop window of entering South Africa in terms of registration, get the customs, and also get the SEZ that they want to also locate. So these are some of the key aspects of the SEZ policy. The SEZ policy implementation framework, the implementation protocols required between various agencies. The legislative framework to be established through the SEZ Act regulations and guidelines. The SEZ strategy will be developed and reviewed by the SEZ advisory board. The national marketing strategy will also to guide the national and international marketing efforts for the existing SEZ as well as the SEZ that will be established. Capacity and skills development program on various workshops, because I think what we also think now is that as we actually designate the SEZ there's a challenge with regard to the skills and capacity in terms of providing the workforce. So that will also, we are currently addressing different work streams. The policy will be monitored in line with the government-wide monitoring framework, and then various elements monitored at different levels and reported to the advisory board and license holders. So this will also allow us to continuously improve and also to report in terms of the impact that we are having on the SEZ. This slide deals with the progress with regard to the regulations. Chair, just to say that in August now we are planning to present the regulations by end of September. So we are doing the final consultation with different stakeholders, the departments, staff, and then and provinces and some of the existing. So the proposed regulations will be gazetted in October, and then we will have 30 days for public comment. Currently, we are working with this department to actually correct some of the things and also to make sure that we work some of the SARS custom legislation correctly, and also to agree in terms of what type of incentives will go with the regulation. The process with regard to the SEZ advisory board, the address for the advisory board members, it went on Friday the 11th, so, and it's been in different newspapers. We are going to finalize the issue. We are actually planning to finalize appointment of the board by end of October. So by the time the regulations are actually gazetted, we will have the advisory board existing. Then also we are currently finalizing with Treasury with regard to the remuneration as well as the board charter for the advisory board. With regard to the incentives, which is chapter 4, section 11, we are currently working with on the accelerated depreciation allowance for buildings. We are also looking at the lower corporate tax rate that we are doing with SARS, the 15%, as well as the employment incentives. So these are some of the incentives that will then apply once the regulations are gazetted, and then that will also the existing SEZ, the investors that locate in SEZ, that will actually qualify. Then we also have the Section 12 I tax allowance, which will be up to 100% tax allowance for both green and brownfield projects. So in terms of the project plan, the tax incentives its effective date will coincide with the start of the SEZ Act. With regard to the progress of the existing SEZ, chapter 7, section 39, consultations are underway with the relevant IDZ provinces to agree on suitable approach to transition to IDZ and to SEZ within the next 3 years. I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Tau, just to talk about the progress with regard to the establishment of the other SEZ.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, honorable members. Allow me to just say that this work is a partnership between the DGI and the provinces, and is therefore coordinated through the economic windmill, so all MECs participating in this work, all HODs, and including the Ministry of Economic Development. In addition, there are task teams for each province that include people from national departments, provinces, and the relevant municipalities. So it's work that the partnership across the three tiers of government and some of the key participants. We are working on 10 proposed laws which we agreed upon by the Economic Green Mac. I'm going to follow that order, which is nearly alphabetical in terms of provinces. In the Eastern Cape, the proposal is around the Wild Coast, but focusing primarily in Tata as the main base. The proposal has been around agro-processing, but as we are undertaking the work, we are uncovering more opportunities in the area. But what is happening at the moment is that the pre-feasibility study has been completed, pre-feasibility study just aimed at making an economic case to determine whether in the long term this zone will be viable and further work should be done. So we are done with that step, what is available. And what we are busy with now is both technical feasibility and business plan development. Once these are completed, the province will be able to make an application to the minister in the required format. Free State, so the targeted region is Harry Smith and Marlundi. The focus there is automotive logistics and agro-processing. There has been a proposal on pharmaceuticals, but at the moment what is coming out strong is automotive logistics. The process has gone through the final stages of public consultation, so the only step left with this project is for the province to finalize that province with the minister and cabinet to decide on whether it's designated or not. But all the preparatory work has been completed. With Gauteng, the proposed region is Johannesburg, Nasrec in particular, for an ICT hub, which will focus on ICT, electronics, BPO, film. This process has just started, so the pre-feasibility study is still underway. KwaZulu-Natal, the Kisaka International Airport, which we commonly refer to as Dube Trade Port, with focus on agro-processing, electronics, aviation. As we all know, the zone has been designated as an IDZ. Limpopo in Dubai, you would recall that that area is one of the limbs of the Bushveld complex with platinum group metal reserves. So the focus there primarily is on the beneficiation of PGMs as well as mining inputs. The feasibility study has been completed. We are busy with technical feasibility and business planning. Limpopo again in Musina, you know that that area is a major trade route with the rest of Africa. So the opportunities there will be trade and related logistics, petrochemicals, mineral processing, and we've completed the pre-feasibility study. We're dealing with technical feasibility and business planning. In Bumalanga, in the Komadi area, which is also a border area with Mozambique, the original proposal was around agro-processing, but what is coming out strongly is around logistics. And we are currently just busy with technical feasibility and business plan. In Northern Cape, the Upington area, you'd recall that much of the Northern Cape is a solar corridor. So the focus in that area is going to be on all related inputs that relate to inputs for renewable energy, clean technologies, and also aviation, given some of the possibilities for what AXA has in the area. Pre-feasibility studies completed with a visa with technical feasibility and business planning. Northwest, Chutechere Bebojanala, it's not just Rustenburg, it's also like Dugas, it's a PM's area. So what we have there is, in essence, beneficiation of minerals plus mining inputs. We have formalized technical pre-feasibility, we have been with technical feasibility and business planning. Atlantis, renewable energy, clean technology and electronics. We have completed the pre-feasibility report and we are busy with technical feasibility and business planning stage. And as the DG mentioned, we are hopeful that within the next 6 months or so, all the preparatory work would have been completed. And we have just to do consultations with the public and comply with other legislative requirements. To conclude, the major learning area that is coming out, we had all hope that agro-processing would be one of the big opportunities. But what is quite clear is that the declining primary agricultural production is a major hindrance for agro-processing across the board. But we are working with all the relevant provinces and other departments to ensure that in the long term, the opportunities in that area can be realized and maximized. Thank you, teacher.
Just then for completeness, let me just very quickly, as you know, these are the 10 new ones, as it were, which is immediately going to be special economic zones. But just to say with the existing five IEZs, again, also we have turned the corner with those IEZs, with the two in the Eastern Cape, Kuga and East London IEZ. As we know, Kuga now has about 18 investors, but more recently, you know, there was the launch of First Automotive Works, which is a truck assembly plant, a very successful investment by the largest automotive company in China. And further progress is expected on the automotive front. There, East London is doing very well. With regard to Saldanha, as you know, we launched the Saldanha IDZ last year. There, we're pleased to report that over the past week or two, Gas Krachen and others, we've managed to unlock a clear agreement from the TNPA to start moving very, very fast with the oil and gas bus, and for them to locate the oil and gas repair facilities at Saldanha. So that one is expected for takeoff. Also, there is intensive work going on with Chutes Bay, also in terms of oil and gas and ship repair. We have, as you know, in the last week, we have designated all the South Africa's Navy's vessels, and we have designated all tugs and other vessels that will be purchased by Transnet. Those ones will now be manufactured locally, and as I said, they will be building our key ports. And then finally, the one which is our Tambo, we also now we are engaging very closely with the Gauteng provincial government in terms of fast-tracking the work around the our Tambo IDZ as well. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Acting DED Maholi, and also for the very succinct presentation here, which clearly spelled out exactly what the progress is and the challenges that remain here. I think this should be an example, DD, to how some of the other work should be presented. Very, very succinct and to the point. Thank you very much, Chief Director, Mr. Tal, as well. Members, it's over to yourselves to come up with some questions. Right, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Jill Lewis, Honourable Elvis, sorry, Honourable Campbell, Honourable Shabandon. In that order, please. Right.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd just like to direct a question to Mr. October, specifically regarding the Durban Dubie Trade Board and the unintended consequences of something like this. And you will know that the Samsung investment is going to cause the closure of three factories that make electronics for them. And this is obviously because they can't, you know, have a main factory and then substitute factories making for them. But my question to you is SEZ not designed to facilitate new production or new businesses as opposed to taking away from existing manufacturing that exists in the country? Because there's two consequences of this. First of all is that 300 jobs will be lost in those three companies, but Samsung is only creating 150 jobs, so there's actually a net loss of 150 jobs. And the corporate tax that those three manufacturing companies pay is 28%, whereas Samsung will only be paying 15%. So here we have a situation where a so-called investment actually leads to tax revenue loss and job losses. Surely that's against or not the intended purposes of SEZ. I'd just like your comments around this particular issue and why we face this situation on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Yes, thank you. Director, I'd like to follow on the same issue. You know, three of those manufacturers have written to the department, and I think they should publish that letter as well, because they argue that they were not informed or consulted at all about the Samsung investment. about this investment scheme competence and the new success of the SEZ policy. But actually, when one scratches below the surface, it seems like a bit of a disaster, frankly, because it's leading to the closure of three local manufacturers. So I remember the act very well when we spoke about that. You know, when we wrote that act in this committee, the purpose was to ensure that new industries, new manufacturing operations were incentivized to locate in SEZs. And there was a procedure laid down in that act for how businesses applied and received permission to locate in SEZs. Now, was that procedure followed in this case? And if it was followed, how is it possible that there's a situation where we now have three local manufacturers shutting their doors?
Thank you very much, Honourable Hilders. Honourable Elbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to know these SEZs that now are under scrutiny for feasibility studies and proclamation or designation, did they come about by way of an application by the various people who live in those areas and the local authorities, or did they come about because of the own research conducted by the DDI? First question. Then secondly, with regard to the Northern Cape, it's good to see something developing up in the northern part of the Northern Cape. Yet, the middle band of the Northern Cape is probably the poorest, one of the poorest areas in the country. And I see no plan for that. Have you received any applications or is there any indication that you would be interested in doing something there? And what would be the nature of the middle part of the Northern Cape? So that would be Hope Town and those areas. In terms of the, I see the incentives here. Is this the full list of incentives or will there be new ones? Is it possible to devise new ones as we go along and learn lessons? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Albert. Honourable Shalambu.
Thanks, Chair. The issue is, I don't know if it's wise to have ideas only around one sector of the economy. Like, just to deal with agro-processing and other than that only. I don't think it will go anywhere because each of those sectors is vulnerable. It means that if economically one of those sectors collapses, the whole SEZ collapses. I think that there must be a new strategy to see what other sectors the department should focus on. So you can allocate it. A minimum 5 per SEZ to say that let's try agro-processing and this and this and that and that. That can be a more urgent and workable SEZ approach instead of just sector-specific SEZ process. Also, the other factors will happen by themselves when those that have identified succeed. I think that is one thing that should underpin your approach to the development of SEZ. And what does it got to do with PGMs? Like, because you're just mentioning them in a broad sense. What exactly got to do? Because the minister the other time said today that we don't have access to platinum. Group metals and where would get them? Because they are not for sale in South Africa. The platinum is not for sale in South Africa. It's not accessible. The platinum corporations have got areas where they take platinum to. Where are you going to get the platinum? What is the strategy? What is the approach? Are you going to negotiate forever? Why can't there be consideration of extracting platinum group metals? It can be. Can happen and then you'll be able to. As part of the incentives, you could say to people who want to invest in industrial and beneficiation processes of the DGF to say that we have the platinum group metals ourselves. It's one of the things that must be looked into more and more concretely in terms of what it is. And that also helps you to deal with the people who are going to engage in the industrial expansion programs. Don't over-rely on foreign direct investment. Like, you need to deliberately invest in what we're saying, black industrial is in your own language. So you must then begin to identify people who are going to play specific roles in those new industries that have to be developed. But as a matter of principle, the identification of only one center as there will not succeed. Let's identify other centers. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Shibambu. Honorable Castle.
One of the issues I wanted to raise, I think somehow it has been raised around the contesting on the Northern Cape Wagab Solar Corridor, as is that you know, just having a single program might not be helpful. I think Honorable Shibambu spoke to the diversification in that regard, which addresses that. The idea behind this is that it's a very brilliant one, but the problem is the process towards implementation of that. I don't know whether the proposed structural advisory board secretariat, how efficient are these going to be? Because if we are going to use the way you know the government departments are structured. It takes forever for one small thing to be implemented. One can give an example of some people who are doing recycling in the area where I come from, Linyanya Township. They have been approaching, I think, one of your institutions that assists in that regard for over 2 years to be helped to get a machine that helps with the compacting of cans. And from the look of things, they will end up going under while waiting for government to come and help. If we do the SEZ in a manner that the way in which government department works, it will take forever before it can be implemented. And one will suggest that probably, I don't want to say organized in the form of a company, but if you have your decision making being shortened, I think it can help us. And in my own opinion, or watching from what you have said, is to create something new. If you go to Johannesburg and create something new, it might not be visible because you know it's highly developed. But if you go to areas that are depressed and create something new, it will be more visible. That if our SEZ can focus in areas which were previously disadvantaged but that have got a potential to grow, it will be very, very helpful. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hazel. Honorable Uyenge, followed by Honorable Nkongi.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for coming late, with your respect, Chairperson. Unfortunately, I did not get the presentation, but what I see here is exactly what I came for. To see the department talking on how to close the gap between the health and north in that. On top there, you are talking to Umtara, the technical visibility and business plans, which I'm very proud of that, to say how best can one get the details of that. What about in Umtara, where that status, where the stage is with regard to the role of the provincial government and local government? Are they participating? Are those two stages, the technical visibility and business plans, are they in place right now? I don't want to ask as to when we do think we will see you hitting the ground running, because we want to tell the people, because people are off the view that we're not doing anything that was so moving. So we want that information so that we take it home. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Yenge. Honorable Kongi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will do what I always do, is to welcome the report from the government, particularly on the progress so far in terms of the establishment of the SEZ.
I'm having a few questions, sir. One is, what informs the choice of a particular sector? I understand that the challenge in Atlantis is very important and very huge, and we need to interact in terms of unemployment rate that is taking place in that particular space in the Western Cape. However, there is a different industry here in the Western Cape, which is a clothing industry. You know, and then I because most of the workforce of this province, you will not have been, you know, victimized by the process of closing down. So what are the plans if we have trying to make sure that we revive that sector of the economy or industry in the Western Cape? I'm raising this particular matter in terms of the Western Cape industry because it's traditionally white. And what are the plans to make sure that we break the racial nature of the clothing industry in the Western Cape and push black people to participate in this industry? Yes, I'm asking that question specifically as your person. The second one is that as you put the aims and objectives of the special economic zones, in the feasibility studies, what do you see? Do you see who actually is going to benefit at the end? And how many are those people going? You can give us in each of, but my specific interest would be in the Western Cape province. For example, if you talk about the renewable energy in Atlantis, you know, who is targeted there? Who could be possible in terms of even, you know, shifting ownership patterns, you know, of the province, such as well as that, who actually controls the economy of the Western Cape. So if our program of, I mean, SPZ, are aiming at shifting those balances, and how to do that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yourself, I think GG, you
thanks,
first.
Yes. Thanks. Let me, as I always do, let me take the easy ones and the difficult ones to send to my colleagues. I think, let me kick off with, I think, the very important point raised by Honourable McPherson in his words. I think that issue of Samsung, yes, it's become quite a big issue to us because we have been working with those three companies with a Samsung issue, and but as we know that this FDI is always a difficult issue. You can never win because, as you know, what happened with Walmart when we opposed Walmart FDI to South Africa, everybody said, "Now you're anti-foreign, you're holding back FDI into the country." FDI was really look, and that was a retailer, you know, where clearly, as you say, it wasn't a manufacturer. But now again, we get the second largest company in the world establishing manufacturing facility, and then we have many people saying now we must stop Samsung from coming to South Africa. I think South African government is unequivocal on this score. They have given DTI not only the mandate but instruction to attract FDI to this country. And as you know, we have over the years turned a corner of FDI. We have all the major investments we've recently had from iSense, from Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Unilever. We've had expansions, as I said, in First Automotive Works and so on. So we have a very big pipeline of attracting FDI into the country, and Samsung is definitely this is one amongst many that we are attracting into the country. As you know, last year we launched iSense in the Western Cape, which is in the same business as Samsung, and that was in Atlantis where we launched it, and so on. Now, what we are doing is we have met with these companies. We are engaging with Samsung to see if they can really try to extend the where possible, still keep subcontracts going with these companies. So I think that is a process we will keep engaging, but we will also go further. We have a range of incentives where we want to work with the sector as a whole to try to develop both domestic manufacturing and FDI. So we are on a program, but I think we must not try to see these things as win-lose situations, that we either have the three or we have Samsung. I think we need both in the country, and we will definitely, as we have in a range of sectors, we will work with those three companies to work with them, in the short term, deal with each of the contracts with that, but also assist them with investments in terms of maybe broadening their product range and then expanding. But let me be clear that our job is to attract FDI into the country. As I said, what competition takes place in the marketplace is not for government to intervene in. You see, companies must compete with each other, and that is good for your overall economy. It raises productivity levels, raises efficiency, and it's good for the economy. So we need a highly competitive economy, and we can never, ever, we actually, at the WTO, we don't have a right to stop any country or company from investing in this country. So I think it must be very clear, but as I said, rest assured, like we do the whole of the manufacturing sector, we will be working with these three companies to get them to upgrade, move into new product ranges, develop incentives as we have for all other sectors. Let me say with Samsung, they're starting with that, but their vision is, you know, is to grow in South Africa and to use the, to use South Africa as the export platform for the whole of the continent, and even to start moving into manufacturing tablets in South Africa. So I think this could be, South Africa could become a major hub, not only in terms of television and white goods, but also in terms of advanced electronic equipment and so on. So this is really new for South Africa to have these kind of investors in that. So that's with regard to the Samsung. With regard to the Northern Cape, I think for now, the one which we've identified was a promise. And because of, as you know, there's already six of the seven solar investors in the solar energy area is now the renewable energy program has been allocated to the Northern Cape. So it's for that reason that we're kicking off with that special economic zones. But I think we're definitely open to looking at other parts of the Northern Cape, because as you know, the Northern Cape is one area where after 150 years of mining, the air is completely depleted, and this is what happens if you extract the natural resources, you don't diversify, you don't beneficiate, all you left with is a big hole in Kimberley. So really, I think we are open to that. We're looking at also at the area of Port Nolloth as another port that can be developed, and potentially even in the future. I think there is talk when I was in Upington about 2 weeks ago, people were talking about even developing Port Nolloth as a to develop that port as a type of a Saldana type arrangement, so we're definitely looking at that. I think then to deal with the issue of how we, the broader issue of how do we decide on these 10, as I said 2 years ago when we were given the instruction to really expand our SEZ program, we had intensive negotiations with all the provinces, and we started with a list of about 25 proposed special economic zones. After a period of consultations, we watered it down to this end. So this is the first phase that we're moving on. As I said, I think as we want to really start expanding these special economic zones now that we have green incentives and all. But I think this is the first the group, and we are very very open to expanding it, because as you know, in other countries, entire towns are allocated as special economic zones. So you have Shenzhen, Shanghai or some. So in a sense, we are still at small scale so I think we'll be open to expanding that. I think on the issue of Honorable Shivambu, I think you're absolutely correct. That is also a mistake to have a mono-sector approach, because, as you know, diversification is key for everything. You can't say a mining economy when the platinum price falls, then you sit with nothing in Rustenburg, because you're only reliant on one commodity or one type of commodity. So I think you're absolutely right. You will see, I mean, I think we're trying to highlight what are the core ones that we're driving, but I think the point is absolutely taken, and we have try to. Also, when you will find also that even though we, the feasibility studies show one direction, when the real market economy kicks in, you will find that what you envisage, like Kucha was going to be a massive steel plant or something, was the original idea. And so now you see it's become automotive, logistics, aquaculture, and so on. So I think you must allow and be flexible enough to be really open to let market forces operate. All you have to do is create the conditions for manufacturing to develop. And the more diversified you are, the better you are off. With regard to the PGMs, I think again that is also a very interesting issue around the PGM, because this is one area that we want to expand. What we are doing is that we are going to be having some very serious engagements with the mining houses around discounted prices for the platinum sector especially. I think if you saw in the papers today, it was announced, but as you know, we've been working for a while on a project where there's 34 houses in Kroonstad which will be powered by PGM, by the fuel cells. And that's the first pilot project, but on a standalone basis, all the electricity needs for these houses will be done off-grid by fuel cells. If that one takes off, then I think definitely we can extend it then to all areas which are off-grid. But also, there's a big market now already for ready telecom masks. Both in South Africa and on the continent, most of your cell phone masks are off-grid, unlike in other parts of the world where it's on the grid. So that's already a big market. Already Vodacom and others use it quite extensively. That's a big market in the continent for telecoms. And as I said, if it is for off-grid housing and so on, we can use fuel cells. And because we've got, this is about 100, almost 100% of the world's thing, we can create a massive industry in that. The other sector we're looking at is catalytic converters and more downstream work as well. Currently, we do about 12% of the world's production with regard to catalytic converters. That's the main use currently used for platinum. We're thinking if we can get a discount from, and our study show that has been done by our industrial development division, if we can get a small discount on the price of our platinum group metals from the world price, we can massively attract catalytic converters to do a much, much higher level of that. With regard to that as well, obviously there's also sometimes in the current catalytic converters it's quite low value added, but there is also work to deepen that. I think I'll ask my colleagues to take over, but if I could just deal with, given I've got some honorable Mkongi issue about Atlantis and then about the clothing industry. Again, as I said, the way we arrived at these things was intensive engagement with the provinces. And out of that one arose the Atlantis area as a very depressed area, but also given the renewable energy program, there was potential for that. So that is, as I said, it was after that intense engagement. But you're right with regard to the biggest sector in the Western Cape, or the most labor-intensive sectors, is still the clothing and textile sector. But what we have is that the SEZs should just be seen as one of a whole toolbox of measures we have to drive industrialization. But as you know, we introduced about 3-4 years ago a clothing textile center scheme dedicated to just reviving the clothing industry. I mean, as you know, massive job losses was excluded. We've managed to now stabilize the clothing sector and a slight growth in the clothing sector. But as you said, the remaining work is also now to change the racial composition of the ownership. As we know, that industry has been run by black people forever, but ownership is close to zero in that sector. But we are rapidly working at a later stage. We can report on that. But as we know, our Deputy Minister launched our Black Industrialist Program, but we will be really focusing on the area of black industrialization in the current period. And definitely the sectors which are ripe for that is is which already, as I said, it's already managed. So we need to look at the ocean dimension.
Thanks, Gigi. I think with regard to the advisory board, the each SEZ will have its own advisory board. It will be the national advisory board that will be advising the minister. Then we'll also have advisory boards in different SEZs. And also the one-stop shop services, it will be located at each SEZ, just to make sure that the decision-making is actually much, much, much quicker. In terms of the incentives, I guess part of the, this is the list that we have, but also in addition to all other incentives that investors will qualify that the department is administering. So they will still, they can still apply for the for other DTI incentives. Thanks.
Thank you. There's a question about Mthatha and what is the role of the province and the local municipality. As we indicated earlier on, this work is a joint project between the DTI and the provinces, and is coordinated through MINMEC. We have provincial steering committees which are headed either by the HOD or the CEO of the development agency to drive implementation, and that participation in those local municipalities. And there's additional support work to ensure capacity building and support for those key stakeholders that don't necessarily have the needed know-how to drive this process. So it's a joint process and there's ongoing work to ensure that over time all the participants can do what they have to do. And as to what's the area, part of the planning work now is to exactly identify where do we start differently. So we have just briefed the provincial cabinet last week, and the teams there that have been asked to deal with those things. Which part of the area do we start with? What land is readily available? Can that land be developed, and what kind of support do we provide for that? So I'm sure that in future briefings you'll get a lot more detail on what is the exact area developed in Tata and what kind of support is required there. And there's a question on what informs the choice of a particular sector. It's a number of factors put together. Some have to do with the endowments of the area. Some have to do with engagements with investors and as to what do they see. Some have to do with the human capital abundance in specific areas as to what do we start. But above all, what we need to just realize is that this, that much of what we do now is catalytic in nature, and it's intended to bring a lot more possibilities and not just focus on what appears here. And as to who the beneficiaries will be from the S events, once again, in a combination of things, in the long term, we all want the regions, that's why a lot of emphasis on the whole region, to be vibrant, to produce the investors, to produce the skills, to produce the entrepreneurs, and attract other skills from our areas. But the challenge in the short term, what is the best way to start? In some cases, we hear them to begin with multinationals, because we will not have always have those capabilities. So the possibilities are region specific. If the area in which you are starting, it is easy for black people in the area to venture into those sectors, the support measures are there within the DTI government to get them in. But by and large, we're going to need the big guns to catalyze those industrial capabilities. If we are moving into fuel cells, we have very few South African companies that can begin to drive investment in fuel cells. So we have a big drive to bring in the multinationals to come and help us there. So the beneficiaries, therefore, will be multifaceted. There will be investors, local and foreign. There will be the communities themselves, in the sense that they can get the jobs, they can get acquire the skills. The local firms will benefit and can begin to provide services to those investors who are getting there. and it moves on to research institutions, to universities, in the sense that the network of interactivity becomes richer and improves over time. And obviously, we will all benefit when we get more cases, more investments, more know-how over time. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, if I could just the issue that I didn't address earlier was just the DEs manifesto, the Honorable Lewis, I think the 15% tax rate, I think again, we are obviously, I mean, especially those steel manufacturers and a few others now, or existing companies, have now asked us now, even though we're not in the SEZ, can we also get this 15%? You see, as you know, when we did this presentation to you 2 years ago, when we assessed why our current IDZ are not performing, what is the reason for their lackluster performance? The research showed very clearly, because South Africa's IDZ, there is no difference between being in the IDZ and being outside the IDZ. There are no special incentives for IDZs. And as you know, in other countries, people have tax-free status in IDZs. They don't even pay tax. So we then, after the presentation to Parliament, we lobbied very hard as a department to get some special tax incentives and other incentives for IDZ so that you can start attracting FDI to this country and domestic and anyway. So that is why, but it means you must have a differential. I mean, if you simply now just extend and reduce people's tax rates, all you do is increase your tax base if you extend it. So it is, it really cannot be that once we make a decision to move in a certain direction, then we have to stay the course. And we can't now think we must revisit the 15% tax rate. And I said, the interest is big. We are getting, especially on the PGMs, we have Ballard, when they launched as a Canadian company who has the fuel cell technology, who, as you said, when you see all these cell phone masks, it is powered by Ballard fuel cells, made by a Canadian company. We are trying to get that company to invest in South Africa. They currently have plants in Canada and they sell in Mexico. It is very key. One of the key things which is going to pull them is also the measure of the 12i tax incentive. As you know, they get 100% depreciation allowance if you're an SEZ. But I think we can't give it to existing people. We must give it to people who are adding and using South Africa as a platform, not only for domestic market, but also to situate multinational companies here to use South Africa as a platform for exports globally. I think that's the key part of these SEZs as well.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, DDG. And thank you, Chief Director. It really, I certainly appreciated that progress report. I hope, members, that even though you may not be entirely satisfied with some of the responses, that all the questions I know have been responded to. However, if there is something specifically that you would still like to pursue, would you please put this in writing and send it to Mr. Mkiva? I think everyone has got his email. Is that correct? Yeah, I know certainly you've got Mr. Herman's, all of you, and then if you would do that, then we will certainly look at it and send it on. Thank you very much. And we're taking our tea break now, and I would appreciate it if people return at 11:30. Thank you.